Hi, and welcome to today's meeting of Book Hoarders Anonymous. Let's all begin by introducing ourselves.
Hi, I'm Shannon, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi, I'm Erin, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Book Hoarders Anonymous, episode 49.
Woo!
We're almost 50.
Almost 50.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Shannon.
And we're going to talk about last homework for the last couple of months, as well as, you know, books and news and stuff. First of all, I'd like to apologize for taking so long to get back with you all. We actually have recorded this once already, but due to an unforeseen technical difficulty, we had to come back and record again a couple of weeks later. This should now be the summertime product.
So everybody's busy.
It's summertime anyway. You all probably forgot who we are by now. I notice no one's been banging down our door asking us where we're at. Why hasn't there been a book hoarders? What's up with that? So we're here and ready to kick it off with what we've been reading this past couple months. You want to start us off?
Sure. I have been reading quite a lot that was really good. I read, I'd had a really horrible reading slump for a while, but I got out of it finally. And I read both of the books by Becky Chambers, who is a science fiction writer, and she wrote two books. One of them is called The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, and then the other one is called A Closed and Common Orbit. And they are, The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet was apparently self-published, and then she got, it became very popular, and she got a real publisher out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is basically very optimistic sci-fi. It's about a group of people that kind of are like long-haul spaceship travelers. You know, they do various like merchanty type things around the galaxy. And it's I've heard comparisons to Firefly, but you know they're because they have this very close-knit sort of, you know, like you're living with these people for like months at a time. You definitely get a sense of them as family. Mm-hmm. And they're all very, you know, there are a few humans, but then there are also several aliens, and that was really fascinating. And they're just, it's very warm. It's there's darkness in it, but in the end there's a lot of hope. And it was one of the few books I've read recently where, like, I didn't even really mind that there wasn't much of a plot for vast majority of the book.
Right.
Because I just enjoyed spending time with these characters so much.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
And then the sequel to that, A Closed and Common Orbit, was about one of the characters. I won't say who because it's a little spoilery. And it's about her adventures kind of away from those people and trying to find her own life and figure out who she is. And it's what I really like about her books also is that they are dealing with a lot of like sort of current issues. You know, there are definitely characters that we would say had disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they are treated really, really like, well, she doesn't treat them condescendingly.
Well,
and she's
good.
Just kind of like, yeah, we should, you know, treat these people like they are the normal humans and or aliens that they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they deserve respect and things like that. But she's, you know, is all these anvilicious type of things that, you know, we wish people would learn, but she like doesn't bang your head with her preachiness.
Oh, that's good.
What I'm trying to say.
That's good.
Yeah. And let's see, I read right, I'm really excited. I don't think I said this the last time we recorded, but I haven't read it yet. But there is a collection of short stories by Zena Henderson called Ingathering that is now on Bard. And it was on Bard a week or so before Bard was experiencing all the technical
right
foul-ups that it's been going through lately. So I grabbed it before that happened, and I haven't read it yet, but In Gathering is, I'm excited to reread it, because, again, it is warm, optimistic sci-fi, and Yay. Zena Henderson was writing in the 50s, and I was thinking we should read it for the book, for the podcast, but that is a 26-hour book, and I'm not doing that.
We're not doing that again. No. Not again.
I think we'd like it better, but no.
Yeah, no.
So I'm excited about that. Let's see. And right now I'm reading a book called The Great Movies, which I got on Bookshare by Roger Ebert. Where he goes through and talks about like 100 of the greatest movies that, and I think that there's like a Great Movies 2.
Wow.
But they're all, you know, a lot of these, like, you know, he talks about a lot of foreign films that I know that I, like, it's great that Roger Ebert loves them, but I will never watch them.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, he clearly knows about his craft.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's why I enjoy reading it, because he's very enthusiastic, and the books are, like, he makes me excited about things like visual shots and things that I would not care about.
Right. Absolutely.
On my own. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's nice to read a book by an enthusiastic person.
Yeah.
And I think the last thing I'll mention is that I've started to reread the Psy Changeling paranormal romance books by Nalini Singh. I reread the first one. I'm probably going to start the next one after we record this podcast.
Oh, there you go.
And my goal is to finish it. There are like 16 books in the series, Ooh. And it's been something I've been interested in reading, but I just, and like there are, most of them are on Bard now, which is exciting, although I don't really like the narrator, so I have the commercial versions.
Gotcha.
But yeah, that's basically what I've been reading.
Okay. Let's see. What have I read? Speaking of something written by someone who's enthusiastic, I read a book about painting this last time, and I would not have even cared about the book if the person had not been really enthusiastic about painting and like what was involved in being a painter. The book is called The Muralist by Barbara Shapiro. It's a book that takes place in the Holocaust, which was the reason that I would never have read it. But our book club was reading it, and I thought, okay, well, I'll read it and, you know, at least have part of it read by the time we meet. And it turned out that I really couldn't put it down. It was fantastic, even though I really dislike the Bard narrator, but I went with it anyway. The author, clearly, I don't know if she was a painter or if she just took painting classes or whatever, but there's clearly a passion for painting there, both in the main characters in the book. And also, I mean, you can tell when she writes about it. It's a very emotional, passionate thing for her. So I really appreciated that. I mean, this was sort of like historical fiction, took place in the World War II era. A woman who is this current character's ancestor was in New York and painting, and she had to take steps to hide herself because of the current anti-Jewish sentiment that was in Europe and the U.S. at the time. And so it was all about her paintings, which turned out to be very political in nature, although when she started out, it wasn't like that. And so because they were so political, she had to hide herself. And so it was all about her ancestor's quest, not her ancestor, but her descendants' quest to find her and what happened to her. Everyone in this book was somehow mentally ill. The main protagonist had these weird sort of like episodes of, I don't know what they called it, when you don't really feel like you're tethered to reality. And of course, there were other artists in it like Mark Rothko and the other guy who was an alcoholic, Jackson Pollard, I believe. And they were all a little crazy, but it was a fun, very interesting, very sort of thought-provoking read. I'm glad I read it, and it gave me new insights into what was involved in actually creating a painting, which I'd never really thought about before. I read Rhapsody, Child of Blood by Elizabeth Hayden. And this is part of a trilogy. It's epic fantasy. I'm not in a rush to read the other two books, although I think I will probably like them, but I just... The first one is felt like a huge game of Dungeons and Dragons, and every so often I would level up, go to another level, have another adventure, level up, go to another level, have another adventure. it just felt like that's what the characters were doing. I don't know. I guess it's not something I would have noticed before I started playing Dungeons and Dragons or playing role-playing games, but now I notice fantasy that's written that way. I find it kind of annoying, actually. So I don't know if I'm going to read the second and third books. They're shorter, which is good. This was like over 20 yeah. hours long. Boy, vey. And I bought it on Audible. I actually bought the book, it was like in a 2-for-1 sale or something a long time ago. I found out though that the other two have been added to Bard and the narrator is decent. So I'm not going to worry with spending credits on the other two. I'll just get them from Bard, but, I'm not in a rush. I did like it, but it was just kind of like, okay, this feels like a big role-playing game. What's next?
Yeah.
How are we going to add some depth to these characters? You know, I appreciate that the heroine is very beautiful and also, you know, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Feisty and can take care of herself. But I really, you know, I wanted more richness, I guess, to the characters. And I didn't really find that. I found them a little papery, like paper mache characters a little bit. It may get better, you know, but I'm not really in a rush. Like I said, another book that I read was London by Edward Rutherford. If you want a long book, it is a definite James Michener-esque sort of history of London from, you know, the dim beginnings of the formation of the cliffs at Dover and of the Thames River to World War II, I think, because it was written in the 50s. And basically, it takes... the history down through the generations of 6 different families who lived in London and how they made decisions that affected the city and the, you know, and Great Britain by consequence. A lot of the characters are fictional, actually. And it kind of got a little old and boring after a while. It was kind of like, okay, these are all, we can be read these chapters as individual novellas because, you know, the book is so long. And in this novella, the guys are going to fight over the girl, and there's some kind of political agenda, and the worthy one gets the girl, and the political agenda gets straightened out, and these families are feuding. And that was kind of like what every chapter was centered around. Maybe different families were feuding, or whatever, but there was a different political, you know, kind of agenda was organized around key events of each time period, basically. I actually kind of enjoyed it, but I think I would have enjoyed it more if I had known less British history. And it wasn't that it was inaccurate. It was just like, yeah, I've heard this stuff already before. And the characters in and of themselves, with a few exceptions, did not really add a whole lot to the narrative. They were just there as, you know, kind of like illustrations. I don't know. That's how I felt about it. I don't know. Other people might feel differently. But it was something that I'd had on my TBR list for a long time and just never read. So I am glad that I did it. And, you know, I don't know that I'd like any of his other books as well. I will say that he writes with a definite feeling for the area because I think that's where he's, you know, where he's from. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, he's written a couple other things about Russia and a couple other things about other parts of the world, kind of like, you know, James Michener has done. But I don't know that I would. I mean, you can definitely tell he has kind of like a passion for the area, and it comes through in his writing. But I don't know that I'd like his other books as well. But we'll see. If I have ages and ages of time, you know, on down the road, if I
in that mythical
universe. And the last thing I want to talk about, I read some nonfiction, but I'll put that aside for the moment. The last one I want to talk about is called The Windfall by Dishka Basu. This is by an author from India, from Delhi, New Delhi in India. And the All the Books podcast is not a good podcast for me. It's put out by the Book Riot Network, and they talk about books that are new or new in the U.S. That have just recently come out and that they read and they really liked, and one of the presenters really liked this book. It was just recently released, although it was released in the U.K. last year, and it's up on Bookshare already. So go figure. It's so funny. It is basically a comedy of manners. In India, this family has just come into some money from a web page that the father built, or he built some kind of web design thing, and sold it and made himself a lot of money, and now they don't know what to do with it. So they're moving up in the world, moving to a really nice neighborhood. He's bought himself a nice Mercedes, and now that he and his wife get to the neighborhood, and they're not really sure how to act or what to do or what's the in thing to do and how to fit in. And the neighbors kind of look down on them because, you know, they're from the poorer quarters of town. In India, there's a really huge gap between rich and poor. Mm-hmm. Huger than here. So it was, you know, it's just really funny. And their son is kind of a subplot. He's going to college here in America, and he's got a white girlfriend, and he's like, do I tell my parents about her? What do I do? You know, that's kind of a subplot going on. And it's just very amusing. Now, I'm reading it in Braille, which means that I'm giving characters like voices in my head, and they all have these really strange, very undefined kind of like Indian accents. And for a while, it was very annoying. Now I've stopped doing it. But when I first started reading the book, I was doing that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to stop. I'm about halfway through. And it's a cute, it's a nice sort of like funny book that makes you aware of things in you know, how people live in other countries. They've got people coming from the Mideast to work during the day as day laborers. You know, that's just like a thing. They just fly in and right. They work and they fly off, you know, and they've got markets in the street with people selling things. And it's just a very different, cultural experience reading that book. I felt very immersed in it. So I'm very glad to have stumbled across this, and the Bookshare has it. And lastly, what I will say I'm looking forward to reading, I've pre-ordered it on Audible. It comes out July 4th. It's called In the Day of the Rain by Rebecca Stott, from the UK, and she was actually in a cult growing up. Her parents were like big time members in this Christian fundamentalist cult in somewhere in the UK. I don't know. It all, you know, it's all like one to me. But you generally think of cult members as being Americans or in the States. And she wrote a memoir about how her parents and her brothers and sisters and, you know, all her family disentangled themselves from the cult. There are some of her books on Bookshare, but this is not one of them. This is a brand new release. It's coming out tomorrow, and she is reading it herself in the Audible version. So I was very happy that I had a credit left and I could pre-order that. And I'll be even more happy when it comes and I can actually listen to it. So, next, let's see. Let's talk about the news for this week, of which there isn't really all that much. Game of Thrones, the last couple seasons have been planned, and they're also planning some prequel spin-off shows. Boy. You know, this could turn out to be really good or really bad. I feel like we're just so saturated with Game of Thrones things.
Yeah,
it's just like,
and I think we've talked about how, and I know we've talked off the podcast about how I'm not watching the TV show until the series is till he's done writing the books.
Right,
I want to know how those, and so therefore I might never watch the TV show again.
Right, me too, because he's not even done writing the books yet, and I feel the same way. I watched one episode of the TV show because I wanted to see what the acting was like. And now I'm just kind of like, okay, I'm not watching any more of the TV show until the books are done. And that might not be forever.
Well, and I think, too, that it's not one of the shows that they have audio described, at least here in the U.S. I sure that they have over the UK. But, you know, so it's definitely a very visual thing. And,
right.
And, you know, watching that by myself without anybody to tell me what's going on, mm-hmm. even though I've read the books.
Apparently you there know. Are some scenes that are different than the books, too, and some things
yeah.
happen slightly differently. And apparently the Red Wedding is much more gruesome, even in the show, although I don't know how that's possible.
Well, I think that there's also something to be said for having that seeing the
yeah.
like you can read about
people chopping each other's heads off
wedding.
And stuff,
right? But it's that there you're a little bit removed from it. Whereas if you're seeing people being flayed alive and beheaded and whatever, you know, it's much more visceral,
right?
So I don't know how I can't imagine that I'm sure you're right, but it is way worse than it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the books, but I can imagine that like whatever it is, it's bad. I don't know if I want to watch it.
I really don't. And I don't know either. I just feel like and I'm trying to watch the show like 13 Reasons Why, which is a Netflix original.
Mm, uh-huh.
And apparently there was a book.
Yes.
And I haven't read the book. But I'm trying to watch the show, and I'm trying to figure out, do I want to read the book, or do I want to watch the show?
I liked the book, but I definitely have no interest in the show, because it was, like, I thought that, like, of all the things that there needed to be 13 episodes about, like, that was not necessarily one of them.
Yeah. I'm watching it because we need something to watch. It's summertime and we're kind of bored.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll continue, and if, you know, in all honesty, if Rodney doesn't feel like watching the rest of it, I'm not going to push very hard for it, because I kind of agree with you. It's kind of like, why do we need more about this? We hear, you know, we hear a lot about it on the news, and a lot of people, I mean, you know, committing suicide is very unfortunate, but I don't see that it needs to be broadcast on television.
Yeah.
Okay, somehow we got. Okay, somehow
so
we got
next time
from
for our Cranky People podcast.
Yes,
on TV that we're not watching.
Yes, exactly. Join us next time for the Cranky podcast. We'll turn into cranky old women. Not that we aren't already.
back to book news.
Milo Yiannopoulos, or whatever his name is. On Book Riot, they call him the author who shall not be named, so I have no idea how to pronounce it, because I've never heard of him before that podcast. He is self-publishing his next book, because he got in a big to-do with Simon & Schuster over the book and content that was going to be in it, which they said they didn't want published because it was too controversial. And he said, screw you all, I'm going to publish it myself, and oh, by the way, here's a lawsuit. So, you know,
good for him.
Good for him.
I think that I don't know how to pronounce his name either. Yiannopoulos sounds good enough to me. My impression is that he is a professional troll.
Yeah,
like literally a professional troll. People pay him to troll. I read an interview with him, or an article about him on some website somewhere, where they were like, you know, he's really just like, he does not believe half the crap that comes out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he does believe in getting a rise out of people, and, you know, that's entirely what his political shtick or his celebrity shtick is. So, you know, good for him. I'm sure that there will be people that are, you know, into his brand of trollish humor
behavior.
That will read the book, whether it's self-published or not, and think that they're getting one over on the man, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm going to.
Yeah, I don't think so. Audible, in more positive news, has created a $5 million fund to pay emerging young playwrights to write audio dramas so that they can publish them, original audio dramas. So the podcast world has been taken by storm by audio dramas. I know this. I listen to several that are very well produced and created by independent artists. But Audible's taking this to a new level by hiring young and emerging playwrights to write original dramas for them, which they will cast and voice. The Audible, you know, studios people will cast and voice them.
Right.
And then release them. So, you know, they're paying people to write plays. I think that's excellent.
Awesome. That's definitely a way for plays to get into the, like, you know, where people could experience them.
Oh, yeah.
I keep thinking that, I love podcast audio dramas. I would love to find ones that aren't horror, though.
I know. I've been thinking the same thing, because most of them that I find are horror or horror related. I've recently gotten sort of addicted to the No Sleep podcast, and I listen to it in broad daylight, and honestly, yeah, it's probably better that I do, because some of those stories are kind of creepy. They're very scary, especially the way, you know, they tell the story and use audio to kind of enhance the experience, and it can be kind of creepy. There was one recently about talking dolls that was really not fun for me.
Ooh, ooh.
I do not, dolls creep me out anyway, so, you know, especially the ones when you were a kid, the ones that cried and talked and said things,
I always
thought that was the most creepy thing. So, so Rodney makes fun of me for listening to it in broad daylight, but I said, I can't help it. I would have nightmares if I listened to these things when I fell asleep. It's called the No Sleep Podcast. But the vast majority are horror, and it would be awesome to find stories that, you know, are a little happier.
Like anything, a good mystery.
Yeah.
You know, like some fantasy. Well, there is the one called Hello from the Magic Tavern that I think is fantasy, but I don't know if it's really so much that it's actually like a coherent fantasy storyline, or if it's just a bunch of people that are improvising.
That I don't know.
That, which I think is what it is, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's less fantasy, like, you know, with a coherent plot, and
right,
more just like they're taking these fantasy tropes. And but yeah, so I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And some like more maybe contemporary, you know, like contemporary drama with no supernatural elements
at
all.
That would be cool.
Would be fun too.
Mm-hmm. So we have a couple other stories that will be in the show notes for you to see, some uplifting, positive stuff. But we will move on in the interest of time and discuss the homework for last time, which Shannon picked. So let's hear your thoughts on that.
So we read The City Not Long After by Pat Murphy. And I picked it because I loved the idea of a post-apocalyptic book starring hippies. I really loved the book. It was another one of the books I read that really got me out of my reading slump. I liked that it was very dreamy. You know, it wasn't, you know, when I think of post-apocalyptic fiction, I think of like, you know, Stephen King or, mm-hmm, you know, things like that where, you know, Stephen King has his dreamy kind of moments, but it's very straightforward and intense. And this was not like that. And it was set in San Francisco, and I've never been to San Francisco, and now I really want to visit San Francisco. And it was definitely, it was San Francisco itself was a character in the book, and I really liked that. And, you know, it was just about a bunch of, you know, there's the apocalypse happened, and there's this guy that wants to make America great again.
Yep.
And he's, you know, gone, he's conquered most of California and like up through Seattle and things like that. And then he's, you know, San Francisco is the holdout, but they, you know, they're a bunch of artists and hippies, and they don't want to, you know, fight violence with violence, you know, especially because in that instance they would lose. So they, you know, they do this passive resistance type of thing where they try to kind of psych the soldiers out. And
right,
I just thought that was really, really fascinating. And I loved the characters. They were all, you know, not the type of characters that I think I would normally see in science fiction,
mm-mm,
but very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed it. What did you think?
I really, I liked it a lot as well. And I think I was the most fascinated by how the city itself became a character in the story. And so there was a little bit of a sort of paranormal aspect to the book,
mm-hmm,
although it wasn't overly developed. and people talked about it like it was normal, which I appreciated. It was kind of like, well, the city just doesn't want them here. And that was a normal thing for the city to be somewhat alive and kind of like a living, breathing entity. I really thought that added an extra dimension of dreaminess to the book. I was going to say unreality, but that's not quite the word I'm looking for, because it was written in a way that made it seem very real, even though it seemed sort of dreamy. It was very sensual in the writing style, make you feel like you were actually there and experiencing these things happening to you, and getting to know the characters who were very human beings. They were very human people with very human emotions and had their doubts and all this. And of course there was a love interest going on in the story as well, which added a little bit of depth to it. But I was just mostly influenced. I was mostly fascinated by the way that, Pat Murphy integrated the city into the book as a character. I thought that was fantastic. And additionally, the writing style, which was, I just felt, drew you in and pulled you in and made you want to finish the book. So
yeah,
those are my non-literary criticisms of this writing. And I've never read anything of Pat Murphy's before, so I have no idea if this is anywhere close to, the usual, or if this is different.
I hadn't either, and mm-hmm. I would like to. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she's still writing.
I don't know. And I was really, I thought some of the characters were so much fun, especially some of the, like hippie characters. The guy with the newspapers. Oh God, I can't remember their names anymore. Or no, it was the woman with the newspapers. And she was trying to keep a newspaper together. In spite of the fact that, the whole world seems to have disintegrated around them. They were trying to make it, a new world, somewhere where they could survive. And I really, appreciated that. The book itself reminded me of a documentary that I had watched a long time ago called A World with No People. And it was basically about what the world would be like if people just up and vanished but left everything behind, which is a little bit unrealistic, but somebody thought it would make a good documentary and they made money off of it. So who am I to say? I mean, but the book reminded me of that because the plant life had gone a little crazy and the stores were falling in because of the weight of the, plants or the roof cracking because of water damage or whatever. And so, people would go through the ruins and steal things and the canned goods. Some of them were not good anymore or, had rusted. And so it just reminded me, it seemed like she had also done her research and thought a lot about what the world would be like when there were significantly fewer people. And then these things had always had been left, just to rot away. And so I remembered that documentary throughout the reading the book. It just reminded me of that. And that's really all I have to say about it. Next month's book, I thought we would do something different since pretty much all of you are Bard users. With the Library of Congress here in the U.S., I thought we would try a book that was produced by a regional library just to see how it compares in terms of production quality and narration quality and everything. So the book that I chose is called Canyon of Remembering by Leslie Pauling Kempse. And we'll put that name in the show notes so you can find the spelling of it is a little unusual, so we'll make sure that's up there. But we'll see how that is. The annotation on Bard makes it sound very pretentious. Hopefully it's not.
Yeah.
And it's just a Western
it's a
romance.
Western.
It's a Western.
Yeah.
But it just, the annotation makes it sound so pretentious.
Yeah.
And I hope it's not like that. Ugh. So, taking our chances on a new author we haven't heard of, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I think that's all we had on the agenda today.
I think so. And thankfully, we had very few technical difficulties, except at the start. So
yes.
This looks like it will be put out soon, and thank you all for being so patient. If you want to get in touch with us in the meantime, you can tweet us at Book Hoarders. You can go on our website, bhapodcast.com, or you can send us an email at bhapodcast@gmail.com.
And if you want to tweet at us individually, you can tweet me. I'm at Bardsong, B-A-R-D-S-O-N-G. Or you can tweet at Erin Edgar.
There you go.
Talk to her.
Yep, you can reach us all that way. And we wish you all the best. And I hope that you have a nice, fulfilling, hot summer.
Yes, but stay cool.
Stay cool. Yes, indeed. All right, well, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you later. Bye.
To contact the Book Hoarders, send email to bhapodcast@gmail.com. Follow Book Hoarders on Twitter. And visit the website at bhapodcast.com.